It has been quite a winter, has it not? Snow and ice and sleet. But not for long. It's already approaching February, and you know what that means. That means March will soon be here, and we'll be celebrating spring in the glorious song of the bird before long, together as we sip on whiskey or a Cabernet, which is what I'm drinking at the moment. I would like some whiskey, but I just haven't gotten around to going to the liquor store. Which I should do, because I whiskey sounds great. Anyway, it's Cabernet for the evening, and this is Art House Radio. I am your host. You already know who I am. If you do not, my name is Troy Ramos, and I welcome you to the show. It is an exciting show. It's episode number 60, by the way. 60! Shit's getting real. 60 episodes down. It's actually a little bit more, because I didn't count some of the Pop Culture Fridays as episodes for some reason. That's my mistake. So it's probably like episode 63 or 64. It doesn't matter. We're trudging on, and this is episode 60. It is the first third of a 3-episode project on Terrence McKenna. Why Terrence McKenna? Well, number one, I love him and his work. He was a great mind, or he had a great mind. Wherever he is now, he's probably either thinking, God, I was really wrong about stuff, or he's thinking, this is incredible. And I like to think it's the latter. And I also know that many of you like Terrence McKenna. How do I know that? Well, let's just say that the downloads favor certain episodes over others. I know who's popular. I know what people like in terms of the downloads. Well, I guess it's just in terms of downloads. It could be other things. Although on iTunes, they do put, you can click on popularity. It's always a popularity contest, isn't it? You can click on there and it'll tell you which episodes are big. So you can actually look for yourself if you want to. Anyway, why Terrence McKenna, besides the reasons that I've already mentioned? Well, because I like the way that he thinks. It pulls me into this state of mind where I question everything, and it either reinforces the things that I already think, it makes me feel strong in their favor, or it challenges the things that maybe I hadn't thought about, or it challenges the some of the things that I had thought about, but no, I'm not so sure about it, because that's what happens. You're sitting in your house, you think of something, you think it's a good idea, and then you go into the real world and bounce it off other people, and sometimes it gets bounced back with not very good results, or results you didn't anticipate. Doesn't necessarily mean you're always wrong or that they're right, but it makes you rethink things. And that's what Terrence McKenna does. He makes you feel like you've just had some sort of a massage for your brain. You feel great. You feel like the load has been lightened, and you feel like you're thinking clearly. That's what this does. So I thought I found 3 excellent videos online. And I think these were speeches. And as far as I know, speeches aren't copyrighted unless somebody maybe wrote the speech. Like I could, like maybe a presidential speech is copyrighted by someone who writes it. But these are just talks. And I think Terrence McKenna would be in favor of me playing these if for some reason it were to be a problem, because he would want me to try to reach you. And another thing, he does talk a lot about in these videos about the things that he thinks we should be doing to move forward in a better way, in a smarter way, in a way that breaks on through to the other side. And listening is not one of the things he rails against. So that's what this podcast is. You're not looking at me, you're hearing this. So I think he would be in favor of me playing these, because I'm trying to make myself a better being and sharing with you these things that I think are helping me, and maybe that you might find something valuable in them. And so it's an educational thing, and I think it's fine anyway, but you know, I just like to put that little disclaimer in there. So I've got 3 episodes. Each video, audio, let's just say audio, each clip is about 15 minutes long, and it's him talking to a group of people. It's not the same talk. It's they're at different places and different points in time and space. And so I thought we'd start with the first one, which is avoiding materialism and consumerism, which I thought was really interesting. And the next one is ego. And then the last one is something that I forget, but I'll remind you before that happens. That'll be the next 2 weeks. Terrence McKenna, packed full, just jam-packed into your brain, making you think about this world and what it is as we walk around in our little hot dog bodies that mean nothing. They're only the vehicles that carry the torch inside of us. The torch being whatever our some people might think of it as a soul. I don't think that's what's happening there. I think it's something that we can't understand. But there's definitely a light, some sort of being that can transcend this body. And by the way, I think that also applies to planet Earth. So he talks a little bit, as you'll hear, about how consumerism and materialism, it's not a lecture. It's not like him saying like you're bad for doing this. It's just a guy asking questions in front of people. He's very sure of himself. He's talking very confidently about some of his ideas, which is fine. That's different than somebody getting up and saying, you know, you're a bad person if you should do this. And he's more like a choir director. Choir directors have to be encouraging. They can't stand up in front of a choir and say like, well, that was terrible. We need to improve, because then it starts to affect the way people think about themselves and the morale of the group. You have to sort of work your magic in a positive way. Say something that's critical, but doesn't sound critical, if you know what I'm saying. So that's what's happening. That will take us, these three episodes, into February, into the great short month of February. And before you know it, it'll be spring, and we'll be together in the warmth and the sunshine and sitting near water wondering what happened to the winter. So let's play this first clip of Terrence McKenna, and then I'll talk on the other side, and then we'll say goodbye, and that'll be time for this episode number 60 of Art House Radio. Don't forget, you can follow us at Art House 43, Instagram and Twitter, and facebook.com/arthouse43, and our website, arthouse43.com, where you can make some donations if you'd like. Okay, let's get to the first clip. This is Terrence McKenna, Avoiding Materialism. Enjoy.
End up a smear through the shale. and nature concludes that intelligence is something never again to put into the hopper, then it will be an enormous tragedy, because we didn't go down without a struggle. We have the technologies, the ideology, the compassion for each other, and caring world. We are not a lost cause yet, but we may end up a lost cause. And people then say, well, what should be done? You know, the Tolstoyan question, what then should be done? Well, I came up through the whole Berkeley thing in the 60s and all that, and I'm very wary of hortatory political prescriptions for what should be done. I mean, we saw that the best impulses in Marxism turn into the most horrifyingly regimented and totalitarian societies. Goodwill is not enough. So what is to be done? I think the answer to this is not only nothing, but considerably less than nothing. And what I mean by that is that the real solutions to our problems lie in a series of negatives. Do not believe. Ideology has poisoned this planet. Ideology is bankrupt. It's a skin game. It's a shell game. It's only for Marx and Marx. It is beneath your dignity as a body to get mixed up in ideology. I mean, after all, where is it writ large that talking monkeys should understand the nature of being anyway? So belief is an incredible cop-out on intellectual truth-seeking, because belief precludes believing in its opposite. And so this is a self-limitation. You've become your own cop. And the ideologies of the 20th century are so shoddy and hobbled together or toxic to human values, they're not worth believing in anyway. So deconditioning ourselves from belief. Some people call it cynicism. I call it good sense. I'm not a cynical person, but I know shit from Shinola, and I don't expect people who don't to get a lot of respect from the rest of us. I mean, what does it mean if you're an optimist and that means you can't proclaim the difference between boot polish and excreta? It's ridiculous. Okay, don't believe. The next thing which comes out of that and is an even stronger prohibition, don't follow. Following is a tasteless position to find yourself in. Pets follow, vice presidents follow, and bad acts follow. So, you know, why follow? All of these gurus, geishas, roshis, and rishis are simply flim-flam artists. They've had thousands of years to get these cons together and run them on you. Believe me, I know, I'm a recovering Catholic. You have to fight your way free of belief, and then do not follow. Do not follow. It's an obsolete, tasteless thing, and there's no human dignity in it whatsoever. Then, a harder one, a more radical one, the one that might get me shot. Do not, in some profoundly metaphysical sense, consume. Do not consume. For obvious reasons, and then not so obvious reasons. The obvious reasons are that the fetish for objects made of matter is wrecking the planet. If everybody on Earth had what the people in the front row here have, there wouldn't be enough metal, glass, plastic, and petroleum in the planet to provide that kind of lifestyle to the billions of people who now aspire it. None of this stuff brings happiness anyway. I recently had the experience of having my 75 Ford Granada blow up on me in the middle of the night. And so I had to buy a new car. So I went down a year and up a brand, and I got a 74 BMW, and it cost me $2,000. And I guarantee you, once you have the little thing on the steering wheel, the quaternity sign, you don't need the $90,000 model. What we should all do is buy antiques. Don't consume anything which hasn't already been made. It's a lot of shit that's been made. It's all over the place. I see it in Manhattan going for a bundle. What we need to do, you see, is retool our values so that what is new is odious, tasteless, déclassé, embarrassing, and not to be found in the better home. The older things are, the better they are. Here's a 50-year-old chair, fine. Here's a 500-year-old chair, how much better? We need to cease to consume, and I'm somewhat facetious in suggesting that we all become aficionados of Chippendale furniture and that sort of thing. That isn't the plan either. But the endless fetishism for consumer objects is wrecking the planet. And then finally, well, no, not finally, there's one after this, but another negative. And this is a slightly more difficult to follow, requires a little cogitation. It's insidious. We shouldn't watch. We shouldn't watch. Watching is some kind of voyeuristic, sadomasochistic peculiarity that we are permitting ourselves because we think there are too many of us to do. But I don't think this is true. I think watching is an incredibly disempowering thing. Millions of people live half-awake, larval lives watching 6.5 hours of TV a day. And as long as they stay in their homes, shopping by phone and fax, everybody is happy. But they participate not at all in the society. They're the marks. And they consume. They consume the media, the entertainment, the clothes, the styles, the brands. They are the morons who are keeping this system running. And I assume that largely the people here tonight are not. We're the people who grind out all this stuff. I mean, I feel I do this. I write books. I produce ideas. They are grist for the marketplace. Harper and Bantam don't care what I'm saying. What they care about is how the books are selling. You know, product number 3245A sub F. How is it doing in the marketplace? Do not watch, because when you're watching, you're not at the center of things. Largely what I'm talking about here is reclaiming experience. Reclaiming experience. This is what's been taken from us. This is why the new music and dance culture is so important. This is why drug culture is so important. This is why the celebration of sexual minorities is so important. This is all about coming to grips with who you really are and how you really feel, and then experiencing it. You know, you are not owned. It is not he or she or them or it that you belong to. And we have been told that we have to fit in. We have to make sense. This is not true. We are creating a world that celebrates diversity, that celebrates the uniqueness of every person. The complexification of our species is a process directly dependent on the complexity that we each bring to the process. The diversity that is spreading through society is a concomitant to the boundary dissolution. And I really believe that science's inability to make sense of human beings in the world as part of nature, to make sense of art, love, hate, aspiration, fear, the failure to make sense of this is the failure to come to terms with the transcendental aspect of reality. We are the best evidence there is that something extraordinarily unusual is happening on this planet, and that it's not something which will go on for millions of years. It began about 20,000 years ago. It's a self-advancing, self-expanding, self-defining process, and it takes no prisoners. You know, there is no going back. There is no going back from the momentum that history has imparted to the human imagination. There is only a going forward into what is called a forward escape through art, through design, through management and integration. That we have to push the art pedal to the floor. We have never designed our societies. We have never managed our societies or our lives. We have never tried to make what we were serve an aesthetic agenda. And that's why we've created a mess. In the absence of an aesthetic agenda, what we've created is an animal house on a global scale. So now it's time to pay the piper. And just in closing, the catalyst now is a combination of technologies, solid-state technologies, and pharmacology. The world that we are leaving behind, the world that failed us, was a world of ideologies and mechanical technologies. And the ideologies, one by one, are going down the tubes. Marxism, Freudianism, fascism, they one by one will be discredited. They cannot sustain. And the mechanical technologies cannot be sustained. They pollute, they dehumanize, they wreck the planet. What is coming into place is a world where drugs replace ideology. That's why drugs are so terrifying to those who oppose them. That's why they say, you want to escape. You want to take drugs to escape. That's right. You want to escape. You want to escape fascism, communism, socialism, existentialism, phenomenology, positivism, all of this stuff. You want to escape ideology into the felt presence of the body, which means drugs and sex and syncopated music. And and parallel to this development and happening in different sectors of society is the hardwiring of our imaginations, the building of databases that we can access instantaneously that make the human past co-present with the now. The boundary dissolution that I'm talking about includes the division between past, present, and future. This is what it means to end Newtonian time. It means that the past, the present, and the future become a coextensive domain where everyone then awakens to the fact, which was always there to be observed, that there is not simply one past. There is nothing called the past. I have a past, you have a past. It's not the same past. Consequently, the futures we are going to are different. We create our own realities as a species and as an individual. And so what we are passing through here in the now, in this lecture, in the 20th century, is a moment of community, a gam, as Melville would say. A gam is where two whaling ships meet at sea. That's what we have here, a gam, a moment of dialogue. and then we will each go back to our own private Idahos.
"We are not a lost cause," he says, "but we may become one." Terrence McKenna, what a mind, right? And I'm doing these episodes solo. I'm sure I'll go back and revisit many Terrence McKenna episodes with other people, which I would love to do. I'd love to have like several people and have a discussion about this sort of thing. But people are busy. I'm busy, and it's hard to schedule things. Nevertheless, are we a lost cause? He doesn't think so, not yet. And I think I love that he points out that political oratory is not the way. That this fool's gold of thinking that Marxism or socialism or fascism or corporatism or oligarchism, if that's the way you say that, is some sort of an answer, is I'm so glad that he could stand up in front of people and say, that's not the way, that we're not going to find answers there. And you never do, because that's just, in a way, it's just sort of pushing responsibility onto others. Right now, we've got a bit of a political hotbed, shall we say. And Friday is going to be a wonderful day. We're going to see lots of people have strokes. Half the country is going to erupt in anger Friday once again. Let me tell you something, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Whenever you have two choices, only two people to choose from, and it's going to be one person eventually that's going to tell 400 million people what they can and can't do and sort of direct their lives on a daily basis through what they say on the media, you're always going to get an asshole. You're always going to get someone who never found weapons of mass destruction. You're always going to get somebody who likes the NDAA and drones people. You're always going to get somebody who lets the Glass-Steagall Act, fall apart. It's going to happen. One person shouldn't be telling the rest of us what to do. How about that? How about our local governments? If we have to have government, how about those are the most important things, I think. And I think he's right when he says that we put too much faith into these sort of governmental bodies, because they get corrupted. Once you concentrate the power somewhere, isn't that where all the assholes are going to go? Not all of them. Obviously, some people have great intentions. And they get corrupted too. And that's why I don't even really want to vote anymore. I'm certainly not voting, I'm certainly not going to pretend like we only have two choices. mean, what a joke. I mean, it's clearly some sort of a scam. Isn't that right? And I think Terrence McKenna agrees with that, because he thinks that this is, that the answer to doing something is not only nothing, he says, but less than nothing. It's beautiful. And I'm not just saying that as a lazy person. I'm saying that as someone who thinks if we continue, you're still working within the context of some sort of political system if you're trying to make a change. I just don't see how that's going to happen. Is it going to start with how you interact with your neighbor when you leave your house each morning? Isn't that how it really starts? Isn't that how things really go down? You and your relationships and your friends and your family, isn't that the people we interact with each day? That's really where it's going to start and where it's going to end, I would imagine. I mean, I think he's right that ideology has poisoned the planet. That's some sort of a shell game. He calls it a skin game. In other words, he says, don't believe, don't follow. You know, all these gurus, these political people and gurus and whatever else you want to call them, have had many hundreds and thousands of years to perfect their game, their con game on all of us. And now that we're fragmented in some sort of way with technology, although I'm not railing against technology, I think he's right about that technology is going to have a positive, more of a positive impact than a negative one. But we're divided and more easily conquered that way. I think he's right on when he talks about that sort of stuff when it comes to, you know, trying to make a change and believing that politics is not the answer or ideology, but drugs. He literally says that at the end. Isms are going to die and drugs will replace ideology. That's why drugs are so terrifying to those who oppose them. I mean, how many times did you hear growing up that you're just using drugs to escape reality? Yeah, that's the point, sweetie. That's the point. Because you it's maybe less about escaping reality, even though that, I think that's certainly a factor. But isn't it about searching for something? Does it have to be about leaving one thing behind, or can it be about searching for another? There's a big difference between the two. You know, I wish we would get out of that mindset that we don't have any other room for improvement. And room for improvement doesn't mean like, okay, we're going to pass legislation that's going to favor this, it's going to favor that. No, what about getting rid of the whole fucking thing? That we do use art, that some sort of aesthetic template, or not template, but like some sort of a measuring stick, that it's how we view our world, how our world looks. I can't remember what he calls it. He calls it like the aesthetic rule. Aesthetic agenda is what he calls. And I think he's so right by talking about how we don't seem to place a lot of value in how we spend our days. It's about producing for somebody else. And that doesn't mean that you can't do things that you love to do. I happen to disagree with him, by the way, when he talks about his point of don't watch, that watching things, and he's referring to TV and film, that it's disempowering, that the people who support watching are mostly, a good percentage of them at least, he just calls them morons who keep the system going. I think he's wrong about that, because I think film can transform the way you think for the better. I think it can rouse some sort of interest in things, or you know, get your mind percolating and thinking about things that you, in ways that you hadn't thought about, or from perspectives you hadn't considered. I mean, can it do that? Can't watching things do that? Yes, it's watching a Cheetos commercial 5 times an hour is not helping anybody except for Cheetos. I mean, it's helping them. But What about Kurosawa films? What about the Criterion Collection, which you can now view on Filmstruck? What about that? You're not getting anything from that? There's nothing beneficial that comes from the Criterion Collection? I disagree, sir. As much as I love Terrence McKenna, I do not see how not watching certain films, Interstellar, Arrival, best film of the year, if it doesn't, I don't even know if it was nominated. Have they announced that? They'd better. It'll be La La Land, probably. And it'll be some other boring, loud movie like Captain Avenger and the Marvel Batman superhero bullshit. Enough with the superheroes. I'm tired of it. So it's a guy who is part robot and he smashes things. It's boring. And it's expensive to make. I'd rather watch two Swedish people in a coffee shop talk about life. Call me crazy. Call me boring. But I would rather see that than some big action hero where some guy's juggling SUVs before he throws it at the bad guy. How is that entertaining? It's not. Now that, I would agree, is disempowering. Here's what I do agree with when he says, don't watch. That when you're watching, you are not at the center of things. And so his point is that you reclaim experience. That's what's been taken away from us. I have to agree with that. I can't remember who it was, if it was a philosopher or some other comedian or thinker that said that the beginning of the end of humanity was when we took things that represented something outside the house and brought them in. So, like, in other words, like, in the beginning, you probably had cave paintings of elk or, I don't know, bears or sea monsters. Fast forward to today where you've got a picture of your family in your cubicle or whatever it is, or a picture of your trip to Sleeping Bear or the Grand Canyon. That the reason that was the end of humanity was because we began settling for those indirect experiences. You walk by your favorite, around your house and you see a picture of that time you were looking at the sequoias in the redwood forest in California. And for that sort of like kills any drive you have to go see that in person. So it takes away direct experience. And he talks about direct experience in another video, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. But he's right. That in a sense, watching pulls us away further away from the want to go out and take a hike. You know, you can watch Rudy Maxa's travel videos on PBS, and yeah, it looks like he's having a great time, and boy, I can almost taste that wine and eat that cheese that he's having in France right now, but you're not. You're just watching some guy have the time of his life. He's not even having that experience right then. It was taped a long time ago, maybe years ago, decade ago. Rick Steves, all of them. It's been over for a long time. You got to go there. You got to get out of whatever box you're in and go there. And we forget that sometimes. And that's why it's so popular to have Netflix and HBO. I'm guessing that's one reason. Because we're all stuck accepting whatever it is that we have to do on a daily basis. And by the way, my life is great. I mean, apart from having to go to a job that I don't really care that much about. And it's nothing about this particular job. I felt that way about every job, almost. Because I want to do what I want to do when I wake up. When I wake up tomorrow, hopefully, when I wake up tomorrow, remind me to tell you about that Keane song. It really did a number on me about 10 years ago. I still think about it. When I wake up tomorrow, I don't know what I want to do. I know what I have to do. I have to go to work. But what if I want to see a movie? Every time I go to work, I park my bike in front of a movie theater because they have the most bike racks. It's like in this like sort of ritzy. It's not a strip mall. It's more like it's hard to describe. It's just like a congregation of businesses, and it's really nice. It's you can tell they spent a lot of money. It looks good. It's not like a strip mall with a Kentucky hut and, a Target or whatever. Anyway, I park my bike in front of the movie theater because there are the most bike racks there. And almost every day I look at that movie theater as I ride my bike in and think, Jesus, would I just love to go see a fucking movie? But I can't. And it's a shame. Doesn't mean there's going to be a great movie in there. Doesn't mean I'm going to be changed. You're always changed when you walk out of a movie. It doesn't mean you're going to be changed for the better or you're going to be moved to tears, but I might be. And I know that it's not going to happen at work. Sometimes it does, but very rarely, because you just kind of want to get out of there, don't you? So you're doing things, as Alan Watts would say, for the money of it, which is absurd, because then you start to confuse it with happiness. Do you see where all this is tying in? Alan Watts. I wonder if Alan Watts ever met Terrence McKenna. I don't know. Let's go back to that Keen song for a second. When I talk about waking up, there's this song, I think it's on Hope and Fear, or Hopes and Fears, I'm not sure, where he says, I'll meet you in the morning when you wake. Or how does that go? He says, please, you got to write into me if I'm not going to figure this out, because I'm not going to Google it later. I can't remember. It's something about how I always felt like he was talking to a girl saying like, if I don't bend and break, if I wake up in the morning, I'll see you when I wake. It's so like, I don't, overwhelming. The idea that it freaks me out. Like I can't fall asleep sometimes because every once in a while I get into a phase where I think like, what if I don't wake up? This is going to be it. I'm entering my little sleep mode here in my little chamber. And this could be the last time I see the earth. Could be the last time I see anything. The last time I have a thought, at least in this context. And sometimes I think it's great that they have lyrics like that. And other times it makes me miss Van Halen. You know what I'm talking about. Van Halen, the party bands. You know, it wasn't like they weren't saying anything thoughtful or relevant, but they were just kind of having fun, you know? I mean, Van Halen was just a party band. AC/DC, same thing. They're just all talking about getting laid. That's what they're talking about, for the most part. Having fun in the sun. Drinking beer, smoking, doing all that stuff. But we've gotten to this place where everything's so serious, or at least it used to be. And those lyrics kind of fucked me up. Anyway, experience. That's what it's about. If I could stand in front of Terrence McKenna, I would, or if I was in these videos, I would have raised my hand and said, but don't you think that, Seven Samurai is an experience for the better? Don't you think Interstellar is a great experience? What about 2001? Isn't a Space Odyssey a good thing to interact with? And he'd be like, And I'd be like, gotcha. And then I'd stand and be like, no, let me finish what he's saying here. I think what he's saying is, well, they throw me out. Oh, that Terrence McKenna, what a guy. What else do I have? He went on to say after that, when he was talking about experience, he went on to say that that when you're talking about not watching, that this is what you need to turn towards is new music and dance and drug culture. That it's so important because it helps you come to grips with who you really are. At least that's what, I mean, I can kind of see it both ways. We kind of are who we are. We are who we are no matter where we are. But he thinks that we should be, or that we really are who we are when we're under the influence of drugs or non-syncopated music or drugs or whatever. He's sort of bouncing back and forth here, especially when he says we've been told we have to fit in, that we have to make sense, and that's not true. I agree with that. I love the idea of not making sense. This whole podcast doesn't make sense. The things I'm talking about doesn't make sense. That's why I keep doing it. Sometimes I think about talking on here and I think, well, that's stupid. That doesn't even make any sense. Or I'm sputtering or whatever. That's me carving out a little piece of myself in this world. And why wouldn't I move forward with it? Who's to say that it's bad? I mean, it's probably a lot of people say it's bad, but it doesn't have to be. Bad compared to what? I mean, what if Arthouse Radio is lucky enough to have Marc Maron or Joe Rogan or somebody else that has a huge following on this podcast, Chris Hardwick? I mean, do I have to make sense? What if I just was completely weirded out? What if I got really, really high and made no sense and they were on for 2 minutes and they said, all right, this is not, I don't have time for this. Are they wrong or am I wrong? Because they're doing things the way they've always, the way they think they should be doing them. And they do them really well. Marc Maron irritates me, but not as a person. I don't know him, but as a, sometimes it feels like he, first of all, I don't like people that you can tell that their politics is always like on the tip of their tongue. Just let it go. This is why I hate isms. And by the way, this is what also drove me off of social media completely after the election. Like, I don't care if you post political stuff. I really don't. That's great. I hope that, because I, especially if I know you're a good person, I know that you just want people to be okay. And so do I. But not everybody's like that. There's people on there who just push and they push and they want their guy to be in there. Guy, I mean candidate. Okay? I mean candidate. They want their person to be in there and everybody else is just fucked up. They're all fucked up, man. That's my point. I don't want to make sense. I think this country doesn't make sense. But I think it makes sense in the wrong way. I think I would love to, let me tell you a little story. It's 2006. I'm in Portland, Oregon. I've only been there for a few months. This is my first interaction with Portland, Oregon. I'm in an apartment. It's in the Northwest, Northwest Everett, to be specific. Beautiful little place. Lots of lovely trees, lots of old buildings. Quite a walk. If you're ever around in the fall or in the springtime, beautiful. So in Portland, they don't have like screens in their windows because they don't have bugs or anything like that. So I'm in there one night and I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm sure I have a drink in my hand or whatever. And I hear all this noise and I look out the window and I see naked people. At least I think they were naked. I don't know if it was the naked bike ride, but it was something similar. And just the stream of bicyclists without shirts went on forever. And I thought, what is this? This is incredible. And that's one of the reasons that you should love places like Portland or the things that they do, some of the things that they do. Because it's like giving a big fuck you to the norm. That's what you want. You want people not to go to work tomorrow. Why? Not because you want them to go bankrupt, but because you want them to try something different. You want them to challenge the structure. Nothing's going to put big, fat, rich people who smoke cigars all day and count their cash, our cash, by the way, in more of an upset nature and have heart attacks and die than for you not to go to work. Let's just have a parade tomorrow. If I was the governor of Michigan, first thing I would do would be like, all right, first of all, we're going to have a big party like Rodney Dangerfield at the end of Caddyshack. We're all going to get laid. I'd scream. And then Journey would play and everybody would love me. Eventually people would find a way to go back to their dumb jobs that they keep going back to, only if you think they're dumb. I think it's dumb if you think it's dumb and you keep going. That's dumb. But if you love it, then more power to you. But that's my point. Every day I ride my bike to and from work, and I don't see very many people walking or riding a bike. I see lots of cars, and I see a lot of people texting in their cars. These habits are getting not only, the cement is not only thickening on these habits, but it's getting worse. If I don't know how it can be worse when you get enclosed in cement and it's hardening, but it is. Because at least before you were driving and looking up, now you're not even looking. You're just driving like with your eyes down. How does that work? I can't even tell you how many times I get hit almost each week. Almost every week, some jackass almost hits me. And it's always my fault. because they keep going and they look at me and they raise their arms. Like, what the fuck are you doing, asshole? Get a car. I'm not getting a car. Fuck you. How about that? Lick my balls. I'm not getting a car. I'm not playing by your rules. Will I get a car eventually? Maybe, because I like to travel around the state, or I love to go to Minnesota, or I love to go to Toronto, and I hate renting cars. I mean, it's not terribly uncheap, but fucking hell, I just rented one the other day and they sent me something saying like they had to charge me an extra $7 because it wasn't at the right gas level. Yes, it was, bitch. Yes, it was. And you charged me $7 based on a $3.50 per gallon? Where did you fill that up? Where? In 2008? Is that where you filled it up? Because I'm pretty sure gas is cheap right now. There's a gas station right by there. Anyway, I digress. I'm just saying I would love to see people dressed up as Count Chocula walking down the street one day, like thousands of them. That, to me, would be wonderful. I wouldn't go to work that day. I'd call in and I'd say, like, I'm sorry, I am not doing the status quo today. It's not happening. There's a Count Chocula parade. Yes, a Count Chocula. Yes, I'm aware of that. It sounds crazy, but it's happening. You should come over. We'll have a beer. We'll smoke some. It'll be great. And then we'll go get some lunch. It's on me. We'll have a fun day. We'll laugh. I'm fired? What? You're fired. And then I'd hang up. That's how the conversation would go. Because they're not ready for it. They're not ready to have the structure challenged. It's sort of like in a family where I don't know what this is like because I had a great childhood and I've got a great family. I'm very lucky. But in a family, if you've got somebody who was molested or somebody was beating the shit out of somebody or there was a murder, God forbid, or whatever it is. Well, murder is a little different because you have to tell somebody. But if there's a secret that's just terrible, that's hanging on inside a family, the moment you let that secret out and everybody's aware of it, the family is destroyed forever. You might be able to come back and pick up the pieces a little bit, but it's never going to be the same. That's what the structure is. That's why they fight marijuana. That's why they want you to go to work. And that's why they want you to continue to pay for Cheetos every 5 minutes. Because they don't want to admit that aliens landed at some point, or that it's possible that every scientist in the world who's somewhat serious believes that there's no possible way we're the only intelligent life in the entire universe. That's children. That's a child's way of thinking. That's children. That's my new catchphrase in 2002. That's children. I'm not dealing with that. That's children. It'll destroy the structure of everything. That's why they can't admit it. That's why they want you to stay in reality and not do drugs. That's why they don't want you dancing around the fire at night. Because if you do, then you're going to figure out that you're actually free. That they can't stop you. That they can't stop anything. It's like the idea of all the... And I'm not... Again, I've made this analogy before and I'm not trying to... You know, the Germans in the 40s were fucking terrible. You know, for what they did, obviously. But if you've got like 20,000, you know, prisoners in a camp and you've got 100 guards with machine guns, take your chances. But they know you won't. It's the same reason, spoiler alert, Walking Dead. This is why they didn't kill the governor for a long time. Remember that scene where the governor killed like half of his own crew and he was at the peak of his madness and his right-hand men for a second picked up the guns and thought like, this is crazy. They're looking at each other. And then they joined in with the governor and started slaughtering people. They could have killed him, but they didn't because they were psyched out. And that's what we are. We're psyched out people. And that's the point of, I think, doing these Terrence McKenna episodes in general. I'm trying to reverse that psychology. I'm trying to start some sort of flame, to get a flicker going so that we can all get together and hang out and enjoy our lives. It's not very long that we have on this planet. Gonna wait till you're retired at 70 to go see Alaska? Gonna wait until you're 90 to roll that wheelchair up to the edge of the Grand Canyon? It's not gonna happen. You're not gonna do it. Your knees aren't gonna work. How are you gonna get that oxygen tank? You know, how are you gonna hang glide with that oxygen tank over the Grand Canyon. You're not going to do it. Going to go skydiving when you don't have any limbs? If you have diabetes, sometimes you don't have limbs. Like that, if it gets really bad. You're not going to do those things. They're tricking you. They're tricking us. And I think there's something to his idea when he says science's inability to make sense of human beings in the world as part of nature, to make sense of our love, our hate, art, aspiration. It's a failure to make sense of this is a failure to come to terms with the transcendental aspect of reality, that we are the best evidence that something unusual is happening on this planet. There's no going back, only forward, he says, through art. And you do that by creating, he says, an aesthetic agenda. And our failure to do that sort of thing is how we've created the mess that we're in. He thinks that the catalyst is technology and pharmacology. I don't know. I don't know about that. Technology is certainly a part of it. Technology was supposed to make our lives better and easier. It hasn't done that. I mean, a little bit. But, you know, having self-checkout lanes was... That's a great idea if you can, if every person who was working at the checkout lane at the grocery store gets to have their own robot in their in place of them, and then they get paid, and then they can do their own work. But that's not how it works. They're not going to pay anybody. How is having robots do jobs that we used to do? How is that helping? It's not. Unless we don't have to pay our rent anymore, then it's helping. I don't know what he means by pharmacology. Maybe he means drugs. I'm not sure. I would assume so. Anyway, that's a mesh of Terrence McKenna / Troyston. And I don't know, maybe it doesn't mix. I don't always agree with Terrence McKenna. I think sometimes he's a little bit hippie heavy for my tastes. I think some of the things he suggests are radical and awesome in a great way. And sometimes I think I don't agree with that. But I do think that we have more common ground than non-common ground or uncommon ground. And I think that we need to find a way to crush that structure. Let's crush it together. The structure that holds us inside these little jail cells that we try to fancy up with pictures of loved ones or places we'd actually like to be. Let's live in the now and enjoy ourselves and drink wine and Buffalo Trace. That's the answer. Smoke up. Okay, that's going to do it for episode 60. This has been a riot. I look forward to the next two Terrence McKenna, part 2 and part 3, episode 61 and or 62 and then 64, I think, because there'll be Pop Culture Fridays in between there. Yeah, so thank you for listening. Art House is supported by people like you who go to our website, arthouse43.com. They click on donate, and then they make some sort of a donation. But you're listening, that's supporting. Let's not get too heavy on the money, man. Creative projects are never free, though, including time. That includes time, not just money. So any support you could give would be greatly appreciated. I look forward to seeing you in the next episode. I will have a Pop Culture Friday for you in a couple of days. I look forward to it because I'm going to have a good weekend. I only got to work one day, so I've got several days off in a row. I'm going to be cloud nine, baby. And I'll try to get really high for that one. I promise you. That, you know what? I've been letting you down with how high I've been when I do these. So I'm going to make a promise to you that I am going to get just uncrushed, barbecued. And then I'm going to record myself laying in the backyard, snow or no snow, laying in the backyard, looking at the sky. That's the best kind of podcast. Okay. That's going to do it for me. Have a great night. I hope that we wake up tomorrow. Oh God. I wonder if there's anybody who's listened to this and then they died right afterwards. Probably not, but it's happened, right? Somebody's listened to a podcast. Certainly somebody's died just after a podcast. I hope it's not this one. I want you to live, damn it. Okay, that's it for me. Until next time, friends.